This is On The Grid, powered by theracetalk.com on mypodcasthouse.com.
G'day everyone and welcome to another episode of On The Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the Radio Show Limited's RS1. Thank you for joining us. Another big show coming up very shortly. We're going to speak to Jack LeBrock and talk about his blistered feet and how that all went for him in Bathurst and how he's fairing up heading into Sandown next weekend. We'll also have a chat to Matt Nolte about this weekend's Shannon's Nationals coming up at Phillip Island. Mark Walker and Richard Quayle to join us as always as well. First of all, the news. And following on from last week's massive weekend supercars, this week has been a tad quieter. News did, however, emerge over the weekend that supercars points leader Shane Van Gisbergen broke his collarbone while mountain biking on Saturday. Van Gisbergen underwent surgery that afternoon in Brisbane to have a plate inserted. Triple Eight released a statement following his surgery stating that it was successful and he was recovering well. They revealed he won't race at this weekend's GT World Challenge opener at Phillip Island. Instead, he will return for the Sandown Super Sprint the following weekend. Some keen supercars fans may have become aware of a splash of pink dominating their social media on Monday. The reasoning behind this was a campaign headed by supercars driver Chas Mostert, who posted a plain pink square on his Instagram on Monday with the hashtag NoSocialHate aimed at cyberbullies targeting supercars teams and drivers. Mostert has been an ambassador for anti-online bullying charity Dolly's Dream since 2019. Mostert's action sparked several fellow supercar drivers following suit, supporting the movement on their social media as well. Will Brown's crash at last weekend's Mount Panorama has resulted in Erebus Motorsport preparing his spare chassis for the Sandown Super Sprint. Erebus Motorsport CEO Barry Ryan explained the decision.
Yeah, so the chassis behind us is the chassis that Will Brown raced at Bathurst, a WD-40 Commodore. It got crashed obviously on Friday in practice two. We worked all night, Friday night, to basically cut this whole corner off. The only thing sitting here was this shock bell where the shock absorber mounts. We had to cut everything around it. You can see some of the tubes have been joined here. Some repairs on the chassis rail that we tried to straighten out here, but essentially this whole chassis rail twisted over and went back about 8 mil. So we repaired it as good as we could at the track, but now this chassis needs to go back, get put on the jig properly. And with the time frame we've got, it's best that we use our spare chassis and convert everything out of this into the spare chassis.
And continuing with Barry Ryan, he also revealed that Erebus Motorsport plans to switch to Camaros in 2022. Once the Gen 3 regulations come into play. Ryan said that Erebus intends to stick with General Motors products because they will move from Commodores to Camaros next season. With this, Erebus becomes the second supercars team behind Triple Eight to publicly state its intention of running Camaros next season. However, it is expected the majority of other Holden squads will make the same switch. To F1 news, and in positive news, the F1 season opener in Bahrain will allow fans. Last year's Bahrain Grand Prix in November was behind closed doors. However, Bahrain announced fans who have been vaccinated or recovered from COVID-19 will be allowed entry into the Grand Prix later this month. Eligibility to attend will be tracked through the nation's Be Aware app, which is a COVID tracing app. Fully vaccinated individuals must allow at least 2 weeks to pass since their second dose to be eligible to attend, while recovered COVID-19 attendants will need to allow 2 weeks since the date of infection. Fans must wear masks at all time and will be subject to health screening on entry. Unfortunately, though, the Azerbaijan Grand Prix in June, however, is going to be held behind closed doors. 2020 ticket holders for the Grand Prix were allowed to roll over their tickets for the 2021 event at no extra cost and will be allowed to do the same this year in hope of attending the 2022 event. Aston Martin last week unveiled their new car for the upcoming F1 season, marking the return of the constructor for the first time since 1960. The team are already looking ahead with team principal Otmar Szafnauer setting a 5-year target of winning an F1 championship. Heading over to MotoGP now, and testing has begun in Qatar this weekend with Aprilia's Aleix Espargaró topping the day one charts with a time of 1 minute 54.6, closely followed by Stefan Brandl, and reigning 2020 MotoGP champion Johan Mir. Day two saw Espargaró placed third in behind Jack Miller and Frenchman Fabio Quartararo, who finished top. The Yamaha rider's time of 1 minute 53.9 seconds makes him the only rider so far to break the 1 minute 54 second barrier. And lastly in news, the MotoGP is set to race on a brand new Hungarian circuit from 2023. The track will be located in Debrecen, the country's second largest city, with construction of the track expected to begin in the next few months. Let us begin our show right now.
This is On The Grid on mypodcasthouse.com.
And joining me, as he always does, from the racetalk.com, Richard Crail. Hello, Crailsy.
Hello, Shebexter. How are you?
I'm fantastic, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good. Looking forward to a massive couple of weeks of motor racing because in the next 5 weeks, all going well, we've got an enormous slate. We've got Phillip Island, Shannon's Motorsport Australia Nationals this weekend, Sandown Supercars the week after. 2 weeks later, first weekend of April, we're back at the mountain for the High Tech Oils Bathurst 6 Hour when TCR will be racing there. And then sunny Tasmania for some Simmons Plains Supercars action. And then it's mid-April already. So,
fantastic.
Massive couple of weeks coming up. We'll have it all covered here on the grid.
Yeah, massive show coming up as well, including a chat to this guy who, well, gee whiz, he probably thinks the worst of Bathurst in the last couple of times he's been there. Last year, of course, he had a bit of a dizzy spell and had to hand over the driving duties to James Moffat for the finish of the Bathurst 1000. This year, race two of the Bathurst 500, some pretty severe burns to his feet. To find out how he's going, we say g'day to the man who's driving the Truck Assist Mustang prepared by Tickford Racing, and that, of course, is Jack LeBrock. He joins us now. G'day, Jack. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, mate. How you guys going?
Yeah, we're okay. First of all, you, mate, we're all a bit concerned about you on that Sunday of race day. How's it all coming?
Yeah, she was in an interesting one. We got through it okay, but yeah, the Saturday night, the foot started to blister up and do all sorts of funny things, even from the Saturday race. And unfortunately, there's a little bit of a knock-on effect into Sunday. And it ended up being quite a painful one. But we got through it all right. It was started left foot braking and doing all sorts of funky business again to try and get through. But definitely don't recommend trying to fry the old foot in the pedal box. Try not to do that again.
Jack, this is something we normally see, or we used to see at the Adelaide 500, but cabin temps there would be 55, 60 degrees. So you would understand why things would get toasty. But Bathurst was very, very pleasant, and I'm sure it was still warm in the cars. But have you worked out what has caused this specific issue for you?
Nah, they're trying to get to the bottom of what's going on now. So all three of us got a little bit toasty in the footwell. But it's more myself. I think just being a little bit taller and my foot basically being on the firewall at full throttle was a little bit of the issue. So we're trying to suss that all out. And it's just, I suppose, we've gone to a little bit of a new fan system for this year. So whether that didn't work quite as well as what we needed to, but it's something we'll hopefully get to the bottom of. But yeah, they're definitely doing a lot in the background to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my next question. Was this a problem at Bathurst last October, or is this something that's coming? Because I know you've got a couple of new cars in the fleet there at Tickford as well.
Yeah. So it's just something that's coming. So last year we had a couple of little issues where it got hot, got unpleasant, but not to the point where we had blistering and stuff like that. So yeah, it's why they're digging into it a little bit more to suss out exactly what it is. Obviously, it's a brand new car that I was driving. So, they're just trying to work out, what happened there. But, yeah, I'm sure we'll get to the bottom of it. They're definitely doing a few different things with the heat shielding, which should definitely help a lot. So, we'll, hopefully be right come Sandown.
So, mate, it explains your qualifying 19th, finishing 19th on Sunday. What it does, though, is it actually is a great, it shows us a fantastic effort by yourself to finish sixth on the Saturday.
Yeah. It was an interesting one because I started to get, quite a lot of pains from my foot on the Saturday race as well. But I suppose at that stage, it was what wasn't as bad. It wasn't previously blistered like I struggled with on Sunday. So it was definitely a tough one to get through it. And we actually lost the radio with like 14, 15 laps to go. So, didn't even have anyone on the radio to listen to me complain about it. So that was a little bit disappointing, but she was all right. It was a good result, and it was a great way to start the year.
Yeah, mate, car looks competitive, and I think there's a good vibe about Tickford after that opening round. Cam was fast, massively unlucky in that first race. Courtney was quick, didn't have a particularly good weekend, but was fast. So, I mean, just give us your assessment on where Tickford's at, and is this a case of you guys picking up where you've left off in at the end of 2020? Because your cars were strong at Bathurst, especially last year, or have you felt even more improvement since then?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, in particular for Cam, like he's been really, really strong in the benchmark for us. So for myself, it's been really cool to see how he's driving the car. And yeah, for myself, I think I made some good improvements compared to Bathurst last year with how I was taking that on. So yeah, it's been really good. And I think, we're all in for a really good year. I'm just looking forward to getting to the next couple of rounds because, the team's definitely doing a great job and preparing some really fast race cars. So for myself and the other guys, I'm sure we just want to get out there and do the best job we can.
Jack, you've been around the game now for a little bit, but still relatively young in the business. To see a guy like Cam doing what he's doing and to drive like he's driving at the moment, and then to have a guy like James Courtney with all the experience under his belt, that must be a little bit of a fillip for you to have those sort of two blokes as teammates.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, actually, loving the fact to have Cam's younger than me, but got more experience in the main game, and JC's got plenty of years under his belt and in supercars and everything else. So that's been really cool to bounce off them, see how they tackle it. And, it's just not even in the car the way they drive it; it's how they act outside the car and the way they work with the engineers. So it's been really good to come into my second year with Tickford and keep building on that and developing a really good relationship now with Scaff, the new engineer for the year. And we're looking forward to seeing where the year takes us.
What's it like getting a brand new supercar, mate?
It's pretty exciting. I just like being able to name it, but apparently the Tickford don't do names. They just give them a fancy little number and they call it that. So don't know, I might have to sneak a name into it at some stage.
Would you go for the women's names like Jamie Wincup does, or are you a little bit more different to that?
Nah, I think you got to, yeah. It'd be rude not to, wouldn't it?
Then on that mark, do you then go through Jamie's names and make sure you don't double up? You wouldn't want the same.
Nah, that's right. Yeah, definitely don't want the same one. But I suppose he's had a few successful cars over the years. So if you can get anything out of that, I'm happy to take that name on board.
I think it was Kate, wasn't it? The VE Commodore. I think it spent some time in the Benz Museum. It's one of the most successful supercars of all time.
Famous old Kate.
I think his current one is Rissa.
Oh, okay.
Well, it'll be his final car, won't it? Yeah.
Interesting.
It's an interesting one.
Hey, yes. JLB, you did a super job last year, and we all know the really challenging circumstances in which we went motor racing in 2020. But for you, did you have a chance, given it was such a long off season, just to sit back and reflect on what you achieved last year? Obviously, Sydney Motorsport Park win, but I think equal to that was your podium at the Bend One, and then you had another top five at the second turnaround. Some really strong top 10 results. So did you have an opportunity just to sit back and reflect on last season and what was the main takeout of what you achieved last year?
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. I think being on the road and stuff, it was just an odd experience. It was pretty cool to be able to go racing, and especially when we did the four back-to-back races. That was pretty awesome. But it was a bit weird. Like, we got home and I think it was just almost a bit of a relief to get back and see the family and friends and stuff like that again. But we had a lot of good results throughout the year. But I think for myself, I didn't perform as well as what I wanted to at Bathurst. So that was something that I worked pretty hard over the off seasons to work on bettering myself. So I sort of forgot about all the other bits and pieces because, yeah, you only really remember your last result. And for me at Bathurst, that wasn't a great one. So, we worked pretty hard on that. But, it was definitely a pretty cool year last year.
The Bathurst 500 was a throwback to the old days of three-day racing. This weekend or next weekend at Sandown, you're back to the new type of format of the two-day racing of Saturday and Sunday. Which one do you prefer, the longer version, having the practice and stuff on the Friday? Or do you like everything being really compacted in those 2 days?
I enjoy the longer races more. That's definitely pretty cool. But I think I prefer the short, sharp race weekends. Just being in the car more, you sit around a fair bit. Twiddling your thumbs on those longer weekends at times. But the short, sharp ones are always pretty cool. It's go the whole time, and it probably does provide some pretty good entertainment as well for the races. Everyone sort of dips in and has a good crack. So I'm looking forward. I think it's probably good. We got a bit of both going on. So it hopefully spice it up a little bit this year.
After a year on the road, like you mentioned, it must be nice to have the folks back at the racetrack. I saw your mum floating around at Mount Panorama. So cool to have the fam back at a racetrack and actually there watching everything that they've helped support for 10 years of junior career and development series and everything building up to this moment.
Yeah, definitely. No, it was unreal having them back. It's the first time they're able to escape the state since it all sort of cracked down early last year. So they're loving it though. Really happy to be back, and it's great to have their support back there, as well as the uncle and auntie and a few other friends and family came along. So it was really good just to have them back at the track, but also the rest of the fans as well. Sort of last year we had them there at times, but couldn't have them in pit lane and hanging out there up and close and personal. So I think it's cool to be back, and see everyone hanging back out at the racetrack again.
Well, and on that note, mate, you spent last year in the Super Cheap Auto car, which was very, very cool, but back in Truck Assist colours this year. And just talk to that, because they've been such a loyal, long-term supporter of you, not just in your Tickford days, but prior to that at Techno and then through the development series as well. So, I mean, it must be cool to be representing that brand in the main game, because they've been with you and supporting you along this journey for a good chunk of it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, absolutely stoked to be back with the Truck Assist guys. And like, we always had that personal connection there as well last year. To be able to carry their colours full time is pretty special. So I've got some really good relationships with a lot of the team all around the country. So looking forward to hopefully bringing some good results for them all, and catching up with them throughout the year. So it should be good. And the car looks fantastic with the orange wheels as well. So I'm liking those at the moment. So it's hopefully going to be a pretty cool year for us all.
There are a few people who didn't like the orange wheels, but I can't buy that. I reckon they're sensational.
Yeah, I actually really rate it, and I think that one of the only people that probably didn't like them is the tire guy's got to clean them at the end of the race. It's they get pretty dirty. Definitely show up the black brake dust, but that's all right. They look the part and definitely stand out in track.
I've actually worn the orange t-shirt just to celebrate.
In solidarity. In black. So there you go. That works.
Hey, mate, all the best with the feet. You should be 100% and A-OK to go for next weekend, where we hope that things continue to get on the rise for you in what hopes to be a very promising 2021 for yourself and your teammates at Tickford.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Thanks for having us, guys. I'll see you around soon.
Will do. Jack LeBrock joining us here on The Grid. All right, Crosby, an old mate of ours joining us now to have a chat about what should be a really big weekend at Phillip Island.
Yeah, it is. The Shannon's Motorsport Australia Championships are there, and the second round for a bunch of the key ARG categories, Super Cheap Auto, TCR Australia, VHTS 5000, Trans Am, Australian GT back on track, which is cool, and partner in crime on the 7 Sport broadcasts of all the ARG and Shannon's categories this year is one Matt Nolte, joining us on The Grid for the first time. Hello, Knuckles.
Hello, Gurus. It's been a long time. Last time we did this was the Colts Bar, wasn't it? Indianapolis.
I was too.
It was. What a great day that was. For people who don't know, we the three of us headed over for the 100th running of the Indy 500. And at that time, I was doing On The Grid live on Melbourne Radio down here on SEN, and had to do a show from Indianapolis, because we had to do a show, which was actually preceded by a Auskick show, which is a show talking to 4 and 5 and 6 year old kids about their favorite footy team. So we tried to work out a great place to do it and where we might get that done. And we had the Indianapolis Colts Bar and Grill. And I thought, I'll ask them if we can use their internet service.
Which was our base. Like, that was everyone was staying nearby. That's where all the guests were staying. And So we'd all just congregate at Colts on the evenings of that to drink a lot of American beer and eat a lot of wings. And
you warned me 3 hours beforehand we were going to do that.
Yeah, correct. So we just rolled back in from a trip out to Brownsburg, wasn't it? We went and saw the Richie Crampton's drag racing setup, which was impressive. Noltz and I spent an hour in the car with Greg Murphy giving Gerald McDonald all kind of grief in their road trip.
We'll never be the same again.
Oh, my God, it was incredible. And then we rolled in and did On the Grid, 15 beers down. Hello to everyone at SEN if you're listening. Yeah.
The best rating show ever, wasn't it?
Yeah, on a Saturday evening, eating wings and drinking beer at Colts Bar and Grill. It was the best radio show ever.
Can I suggest to anyone that if you're looking at picking up an American woman, it's not a bad way to do it? They were quite intrigued by
it was the Oz Kick show, Shebex, that got them on, because everyone would come up and inquire, oh, hey, what are you guys doing? And you'd play them the audio, and there's this little 4-year-old.
Those kids are cute.
Little 4-year-old Timmy was there. Anyway, good times. I'm glad you remember that, Noltz. We could reminisce on that trip until we're grey. Yeah. We had good fun down in Tassie for the opening round. The Boost Mobile Race Tasmania was a great event, rolling things out with Seven Sport. Cool to be on the big network, isn't it? And pretty solid weekend down there, I thought.
I thought that was one of the best weekends I think I've done in my career with you guys down there. And the anticipation waiting for that event was so long. Mm. I was very sad when Phillip Island got postponed, because we had such good momentum going there. But I'm sure when we get to Phillip Island this weekend, it's just going to pick up where we left off. And the addition of some more cars, like S5000 and TCR, and of course the GTs are featuring as well. It's going to be a mega weekend.
It's a bit of a shame that it wasn't last weekend. Of course, Phillip Island Historics were last weekend. Beautiful weather. Yeah. This weekend, though, seems like we could have a little bit of wind and a little bit of rain, and it wouldn't be a Phillip Island race weekend without it, would it?
That's the morning forecast, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll change by lunchtime.
Yeah.
What do we... you said it was one of your best weekends. It's not a massively high benchmark, though, for you, though. So, you know.
I promised I'd be professional here, but if you want me to tone it down to our phone call styles, we can.
There was no promise of professionalism, not on the grid. Let's start. You're calling TCR with our great mate Greg Rust, who's been on the show this year already. What did you take out of round one? She's fairly competitive old racing there, but it seems like you're going to have to get some BOP to go your way as well at certain rounds.
Yeah, the BOP, we try to avoid the subject as much as we can during the weekends, but it was clear that one mark had it more than everybody else. And of course, that gets adjusted by the global team at TCR. Mm-hmm. It's not something we can do on the weekend when an Alfa Romeo or an Audi or Hyundai is quicker. So I'm not sure how it's going to go when we get to Phillip Island, but super impressed with Lee Holdsworth straight out, having never driven a front-wheel drive car. He was exceptional, what we should be, because he's so experienced now. But Jay Hansen, for me, guys, a teenager, 17 years of age, that kid is going to be a champion in whatever car he sits in.
Yeah, he was super. I was so pleased for Jordan Cox as well.
Yes.
Because he spent so long, I was going to say in the system, but he hasn't really even been in the system. He's been racing state level improved production stuff, but going viral on YouTube because in a little front wheel drive Honda, he's gobbling people up around the outside at Brock Skyline at Bathurst. So with a million views on YouTube. So I was so pleased to see him come out in front of the championship, because he's worked for a long, long time to get himself in a car that can compete at an outright level in a national championship. And he's finally got that in that GRM Alpha. I'm really excited to see what he can do. If he gets in an arm wrestle with Holdsy or Mostert or, you know, Aaron Cameron or any one of these front runners in TCR this year, it could be really, really good fun.
He was an absolute no-brainer for the category when he came along in the first year, and I'm glad he's got a full-time ride in there. But you brought up some names there, guys like Mostert, guys like Caruso, Aaron Cameron, Ben Barguana, that battle we saw at Tasmania. You've already got that mid-pack scramble building after one round.
I love the fact that some of these drivers are trying some nice colours on their car, and one car that's going to stand out, an absolute pearler, is the Audi RS3 of Liam McAdam, and that in those indigenous colours that he's put on the Audi. It looks spectacular.
Yeah, phenomenal looking car. And Liam himself, a very, very talented racer. We saw him in both Kumo Series and in Super 2 with Eggleston a couple of years ago. So we're getting some names come back this weekend, which will mix it up even more. We had a very solid field. And Krause, you'll agree with this too. To go to Tasmania and have the level of entries, the quality of the field we had, that's only going to bode well when we start going to more mainland tracks like your Phillip Islands. I mean, Bathurst is going to be off the wall, not just the six-hour weekend, but the international later in the year. So if the positive to come out of the last 12 months is everybody's just busting to get back onto the racetrack, big fields of numbers wherever we look, and that's just fantastic.
Are you enjoying working with the great Gregory Rust?
I pinch myself still. We've done it a few times. You know what it's like. I mean, it's hard not to get up in the seat when you've got these guys around you and the entire team. It's a different mix of people, isn't there? We've got cricketers, we've got TV hosts involved, and they all just love the sport. Hodgie actually sat there. Brad Hodge sat next to us in the commentary box, Shebex, and did not leave the whole time. And he was genuinely interested in what was going on. And I'm saying that hand to heart because he literally was standing there taking notes, listening to what was going on. So he's a great addition. Jess Dane has been instantly accepted amongst the ranks down there too. So with change in motorsport, people don't like that, do they? But I think they're going to win them over as the year goes on.
Yeah, you're probably right. And when Rusty hops out of the box, then Crowley jumps in for the S5000s. And I'm so looking forward to seeing these cars at Phillip Island.
Have you seen them live yet?
I saw them for a little bit at Sandown last year when they did like three or four laps on the Sunday before that race was called off.
I'm going to shiver down my spine right now thinking about it again because, Crowley, remember that first race at Sandown? We left the commentary box door open deliberately.
Yeah.
Just to feel the noise. And we only got that short session in at the Grand Prix last year before we all got forced into lockdown. They were great at Tasmania on a ball ring, but really this weekend is going to be the track where they show their true potential. If you watch some of those testing videos that Jimmy Golding has done, I can't wait to see them pile into turn number one for the first time.
They're going to be properly fast.
Yeah.
And they're not far off outright lap record levels now. And with more time and development, they will be. But the level of competition as well, it's not a massive field. That will come in time. It's very different to TCR S5000. It's a lot more specialized. It's going to take time to build up to a regular grids of 14 to 16 cars, which is where it will be. But the competition at the front is great, and I'm really looking forward to this weekend. I think Bieber, James Golding, probably wasn't quite as fast as he would have liked to have been down in Tassie, but I think he'll be really good at the island. But it's the Tim Macro, Tom Randall, and then throw in Joey Mawson mix that I'm really looking forward to. Randall v. Macro in particular, young bloke coming up through the ranks versus one of the best wings and slicks drivers, in my opinion, Australia's produced in the last 20 years, but never quite got that kick on to an international career purely down to not having millions of dollars. it tempted us and teased us at Simmons Plains, didn't it? And I think Phillip Island could offer more at a circuit where those cars are really going to open up.
I read a story. I'm not saying it's anything factual about it, but hearing the word SVG thrown around and potentially he might want to drive one of these down the track is exciting to hear. And that's what's so good about S5000 is that, you know, it's going to bring, once we can fly around the world again, and God, I miss being on a plane going to America, by the way, it's really doing my head in.
Yeah.
But when we can start traveling again, we'll start attracting the likes. Matty Brabs would definitely love to have a start again down the track. We had Rubens Barrichello the first weekend. So the opportunities for international drivers to come and join the grid, this category has got a massive future. And I think finally, we're going to have a genuine open wheeler category that's going to go for a long, long time. There's been a few opportunities tried, but I think this is the real deal.
Shebex, yeah, funny. It's funny in commentary because poor Matt's there in the corner just sticking his hand up. So please let me speak. Let me speak. Because as you know, with open wheelers, I tend to get a bit up on the wheel.
The difference, Shebex, you can just tell his level rises. And I just sit next to him and just, it's awesome to watch him because it's a genuinely passionate guy about open wheel. I mean, we both love open wheelers. We, you know, come from the Adelaide Grand Prix era, for God's sake. But it's a difference in his commentary there. And I don't care if I sit back. Actually, I'll turn my mic off this weekend.
Yeah. You probably will, though. No, he can do it. I'm not paid enough to do all of this, so let him do it on his own.
The only category, you know, is even close enough for Crowley to get up and excited about is Porsches.
Yes.
Of course, the Porsche Michelin Sprint Challenge surfaces this weekend, and some of the best young Aussie racers in one mate category will show their face again for 2021.
Yeah, that's going to be a super field. Shebex, more than 20 cars entered, and it's a back-to-back Porsche Fest because Carrera Cup kicks off at Sandown the week after. And I can't reveal the field yet, but you wait till you see who's in the Carrera Cup grid this year. It's just utterly extraordinary. There's like 15 pro cars at the front of the field. I think Noltz is on the bench for Porsches this weekend. I think I'm calling it with Gregory, which will be great. But it's going to be good. Really cool weekend of racing. I think there's 24 Trans Am cars too.
Owen Kelly's back.
Owen Kelly, that's fantastic. Yeah. I was rapt to read that.
Can I just say, we probably didn't really give the shout out to Marcus Ambrose Motorsport as much as we should have at Tasmania. To see the two-time champion in the paddock with a race team back on there, it just excites me so much. We saw some of the boys on Sunday, the pseudo Sunday night, the Tuesday night in Launceston, having a feed there after all finished at the McAllisters. And everybody was just so excited about, hey, we had 19 cars in Tasmania. There's, up to 30 cars in the country at the moment that are registered or in workshops ready to go. So wait till we start going to the heartland like Queensland, where a lot of the cars are based there. So Morgan Park, all those tracks down later in the year, it's going to be awesome. And that category is just wild.
When I saw them at Adelaide last year, before everything got shut down, of course, a couple of weeks later at the Grand Prix, I walked away from Adelaide thinking that if that was to be the next category of supercars, those Trans Am cars, I'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, and I saw them in Detroit, I think 2016. I came back raving about them. It's when Sheldon Creed did double duties that weekend, and there was 38 of them running there on the streets of Belle Isle. And I went, man, this is everything it was all about years ago. Noise, flames, the unpredictability, and the cars were getting sideways in the corners. That's what motor racing to me is all about.
Yeah, great. And they're very, very cool. Hey, I want to touch on Sheldon Creed just quickly as a quick diversion before we talk about GT, which is back this weekend. And we should have mentioned listening to On the Grid via Radio Show Limited Networks channels internationally with a lot of GT racing fans. So we'll delve into the opening round of, and let me just read this off the screen because it's a mouthful, the Fanatec GT World Challenge powered by AWS. It's round one, Phillip Island.
Right, I've been rehearsing. Rehearsing the car all the way down here today.
Excellent. Sheldon Creed. So Sheldon raced in Stadium Super Trucks here in Oz and in the US of A. How cool is it to see him performing at the pretty high level in NASCAR?
When he came to Australia, he was already a champion. Mm. And remember, being in your late teens, you're already considered a veteran in American racing. He was already touted as a future star wherever he went. I mean, the path was always going to be NASCAR, but to go into the truck series like he did and win in the first year, take him to a dirt track where he's a specialist at, it's only a matter of time before we see him in the NASCAR Cup Series and he'll ruffle the feathers. But that's what SST was about. Robbie Gordon would get all his old mates back from the NASCAR days, young and old, and look what we've seen. With those guys have come out and raced in Australia. That's what's so cool about that.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. Boys, GT racing returns this weekend. Basically the first GT race in Australia since last year's Bathurst 12 Hour. So it's been a very, very long time. GT World Challenge under a new brand.
GT returns to GT racing.
Yeah, well, that too. And it's a good field. 20 cars is a pretty decent effort for a category that's been through the ringer over the last, domestically outside of the 12 Hour. The last 5 years have been really tough for Australian GT competition, but we'll run through some of the contenders. Noltz, you're on the mic for this. There's a couple of really good cars. The big story leading in is that we don't get to see SVG play because he injured himself riding his bike, so he's had some surgery on his collarbone to get ready in time for supercars at Sandown. You must, when you triple eight, you go, we've lost Shane. Oh, well, Jamie Wincup will do.
Replace cream with cream.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, and then cream if he wasn't available, can someone ring Lounsey?
Well, exactly right. Yeah, it's not a bad life when your backup driver's Jamie Wincup, is it?
It'd be dangerous if they were both together in that car this weekend as well. I mean, like, just give them the trophy and everyone else can go home now. No, I think this is their biggest chance ever for some stability. The SRO organisation, which you're well familiar with, joining hands now with the group. Decision here of cars. And we'll get a lot of cars out of workshops. Guys like Scotty Taylor, I bumped into a Bathurst last year at the 1000 on the way into the track. And they're all still passionate about racing the cars, but it just didn't seem like there was much harmony amongst the group. I think they're going to get that now. And they're going to get the mixture of these 1 hour races, a 3 hour race coming up later in this year. Well, that's what they're designed to do. I really enjoyed the format they used at the Grand Prix with the sprint races. They couldn't do much more than what they were, but it actually made the racing exciting, but bunched up into a smaller group, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with you. There's some interesting names on this. So Stephen and Brenton Grove, they're well credentialed. That's a brand new Porsche GT3R. So that's going to be a very, very fast car. Great to see Quinny there in the Aston. He ran that last year in the Tin Tops up in Townsville. Had some good battles with cup cars. Tony Bates and Chazzy Mostert and an Audi R8 LMS. That's a very, very good combo. Andrew McPherson and Benny Porter will fly under the radar a little bit in the Lambo Huracan. Ben Porter's done a lot of laps in that car and is very, very fast, underrated AM driver. Pete Edwards and Adrian Dietz in the Ferrari, which is great. Arthur Abrahams is running an Audi R8. Now, I was going, I know that name. Now, Arthur won the Australian Formula 2 Championship in the 80s a couple of times.
Cheers.
But also ran the NRC International Formula Holden team for a long time.
That's the one they ran that car that looked like the William the Rothman livery that they had. Was it Darren Pate that drove?
Yeah, Darren Pate drove for them. Christian Murchison drove for them a couple of times as well. Really competitive race team. So that's a bit of a name from the past. I was surprised to see on the entry list. Very, very cool. He's in an Audi. Yasser Shahin and Garth Tander. That's a good combo.
Absolutely.
Yasser is almost as fast as the pros. And Garth Tander, I mean, doesn't get any more pro. one of those annoying blokes that can race cars and commentate and will do Noltz and I out of a gig at some point. Because
it's been a good ride.
Yeah, because he's just good at everything. And also, down in the trophy class running an Audi R8, Vince Tesserario, who was the original guy who started the 12-hour.
Is that right?
Yeah, back in 1991.
Wow.
So there you go, running an Audi R8.
So again, backs up our point that now there's confidence amongst the ranks. We're seeing names we haven't seen for a long time. Yes, there'll be professional drivers in it. We need to have them. But it's also bringing out the guys that were you once or twice a year is out there, and club-level races as well. So it's a good mix. And that, to me, what you've just said with those names there, that's a big tick straight away for this year.
Yeah. At least you guys will lose your job to a Bathurst winner. I lost my gig at the MCG for international cricket to a woman because they needed a lady's voice.
So, sadly, anyway, with your voice, you can't really high-pitch that anymore, you know. Like, you need a Dean Neal voice or something like that to, you know, get it up in the seat a bit there, mate, you know.
Exactly. Hey, Matt, thank you for joining us. It's going to be an amazing weekend coming up at Phillip Island. There's no doubt about that. We also should mention, too, that if anyone in the Porsche 944 garage is missing any parts, we know where you might be able to find them.
Yeah. You're not going anywhere near that panic this weekend.
No, I've been black banned because right now I need a torque tube. I need a rear bell housing. I need a transaxle, left front pop-up headlight.
Security. Security.
You can always take you down to a Porsche part if you like. You don't need to go rummaging.
No, they're closed. They've closed. No. It's a tragedy. Yes.
So that was the original motorsport category that I first ever commentated. And it's exciting they're going to be at Phillip Island supporting this weekend. I feel like dusting off the old Yokohama jacket that I've got. Porsche Park logo.
It's genuinely great racing, the 944s. It is a very, very cool category. Screens of 7 this weekend. Matt Nolte, massive broadcast both days. We're on 7+ for streaming as well. Internationally, you can watch it via motorsport.tv. If you're in the land of the long white cloud, we'll be live on Sky Sports New Zealand as well. Looking forward to it. It's going to be amazing.
Touchdown Thursday night, Krause. Looking forward to seeing you down the island.
See you at the
Melbourne island. Melbourne will never be the same again.
And
Noldy, thanks for your time.
It's been 12 months since I see you, brother. Let's catch up soon, mate. It's been far too long.
Very much looking forward. I think I'm coming down there on Sunday, so I'll make sure I say good day.
Can't wait. See you, legends.
Yeah, Matt Noldy joining us here on the grid.
This is On The Grid on mypodcasthouse.com.
All right. Love finishing the show this way, Richard, when we're joined by our good mate, Mark Walker, also from theracetalk.com. Hello, Mark.
Tony Shebeki, Richard Crail. Good podcasting to you. Hey, we get to go back to Phillip Island this weekend.
Well, you get to go back for a back-to-back weekend. First of all, congratulations, mate. Lovely little story on the Race Talk. A day or two ago about the historics down there and some great shots. Did you have a fun weekend?
Oh, look, it was weird. It was weird, these COVID times we live in. Having gone to a few sort of lower level events in Queensland last year, those events were like nothing had ever changed in the COVID world. You scanned a QR code as you went through the gate and then you just kicked on like you normally would and sort of went wherever you want and did whatever you wanted to do. This Phillip Island deal on the weekend, they limited to 1,000 punters. for obvious reasons that they've got for whatever they've got going across the board with the government. And they weren't allowed in until 9 a.m. And then they were only allowed on the pitch straight. They could go on the pits all right. You're only allowed on the pitch straight down to sort of turn two and throughout the pits. So you're very much limited in where you could go, which was a bit painful because you've got Phillip Island, such a picturesque track, and there's so many good viewing spots. And they sort of corralled everyone into this one spot. It was all about social distancing, but then they sort of jammed everyone into the one area. And 1,000 people, I don't know how they accounted for that, whether it was genuinely 1,000 tickets in total. There were 350-odd entries. So, I mean, obviously all those teams and drivers had tickets that they were able to hand around. But the place for the area that they had, it looked reasonably full. Like, there was a lot of people there. This weekend, for the Shannons Motor Racing Australia Championships down there, they're allowing 3,500 people per day on site, which I don't know how they're going to allow that to sort of happen with the area there. And, I mean, they had all the COVID marshals and all that sort of thing. And the COVID marshal was standing the closest to anyone I saw all day, not wearing a face mask. So I'm not quite sure how that works, but they've obviously done the TAFE course in COVID management and understand the ins and outs of it all. But, yeah, that side of it was weird. Obviously, the historic side of it was pretty gross. Except for one thing is that in these COVID times, not a lot of the interstate guys and girls were able to make the trip down. So it was probably missing 250 cars in total that you'd normally see come from all over the spot. And they'd normally jam all the qualifying and practice on a Friday and just have racing on the weekend. But there seemed to be a few less categories than normal, so they were able to put a bit of qualifying on the Saturday. Still some cool cars. Obviously, some were missing, but some cool cars is better than no cool cars, and jammed a bit of a gallery up there in the race talk, and certainly got people clicking, which is what we want to see.
It did, yeah. Some amazing cars at that event, and when it's back to full after COVID health, I'm going to go because there's some amazing stuff. But even the bits and pieces that were there, Duncan McKellar in the 962, George Nackis in his car. I've had the fortune of seeing them both run over here in Adelaide at the Adelaide Motorsport Festival and at the Bend, and they're incredible. Old Giorgio Belgarino Nettis in his Ferrari F15 685, the big turbocharged 1.5 liter.
Rich, he had two of them there. He had the spare car ready to roll.
Yes.
And I managed to crawl all over them and get all the spy photos. So yeah, that's amazing. An upcoming feature. So looking forward to that one.
He's got a 95 F412 as well, the V12 car sitting in the shop. Doesn't run it very often because it turns out very hard to get parts for a 1995 Ferrari V12 Formula One engine. I know that, find that unbelievable, but just extraordinary, and love seeing those cars out. And there's a few more Formula One cars coming into Australia this year, old Formula One cars that we'll talk about down the road on the race talk and on the grid. I think that's going to be cool. Good field of historic touring cars. It was cool to see Slatey back up on the wheel, Mark, in the V8s, and having a bit of a scrap with Harry Jones in a couple of extra Holden Racing Team cars.
And that was a bit strange in itself. Obviously, the 5-litre touring car movement's picking up a bit of momentum, and they had a series of super sprints over the weekend. So it was non-competitive, but it was against the clock sort of thing. Slatey was out there on fire, as you'd expect. I mean, he was a front row qualifier at Bathurst, and probably a good thing for him to just shake off the cobwebs after, you know, you're not going to have any jitters. He's gotten all that out of the way. He's bashed out some quick laps at Phillip Island, so he should be on the money again when we get back to Sandown. But yeah, it's a bit of an oddity to see these newer spec cars there. It was interesting to see how the historic racing purists received that whole thing, but you know, people on the race talk loved it, so that's all we're interested about. But well, I mean,
they're heritage cars now. You look at a 2005 supercar, I mean, it's 18 or 17 years old. So, you know, it's not officially historic, but gee, they're pretty close. And the sport's moved on a long way since then. I love looking at the super sprint results and seeing some of the photos. The top three, Tim Slade, so Harry Jones, who's a young gun in Carrera Cup and will be title contender this year. Tim Blanchard, for Australian Formula 4 champion and former supercar full-timer, still current co-driver. So I love seeing these names pop up at these events, which is very, very cool. The Jones family up there in Queensland have got a pretty cool collection of racing cars, Mark. I know you've had a poke around quite a few of them up there, and it's pretty impressive.
Oh, there's a lot of really cool stories there. Like, even they've started investing in Formula Holdens. They got a fleet of them ready to roll. But we did a story for the Race Talk on their Schnitzer winning, BTC winning Schnitzer BMW that Joe Winklehock took the title over there. And that's just an awesome piece of kit, because a lot of our great Bathurst winning and championship winning cars have been heading overseas, because that's where the dollars dictate that they go. But finally, Australia's got one back, and we've got a BTCC winner up there in the Jones stable. And talking to Peter Jones on the weekend, they have been absolutely flat chat in recent months, doing all sorts of things that they've got on the go up there. So they've got a cool shed. There's so many cool sheds like that around Australia that these guys do take them out there, and they do air these cars and give them a big run. And that was Harry's second ever go in a supercar on the weekend, and he did quite a nice job. A bit of a different beast to what he's used to in Porsche land, but he did a nice job.
Well, you've got to take them for a run, don't you? You can't own these cars and just put them away and never use them. They've got to go out.
Well, you can, but we're thankful forever to people that actually do drive them.
Yeah.
Like the Joneses, but there are people that buy them and just saw them. So, yeah, I it's awesome to see these cars actually getting used and actually getting run, which is
it's fantastic,
which is tremendous.
No, you go. I was just going to say, you mentioned earlier when we were talking to Noltz about the fact that Shane Van Gisbergen won't be available this weekend at Phillip Island due to the fact that he's broken his collarbone falling off a bike. Mate, I've experienced three broken collarbones, and I'm giving you the mail. I don't think he'll race at Sandown next weekend. I honestly do not believe how he could strap himself into a supercar and put himself through driving a lap of Sandown with the G-forces and all that sort of stuff, even with the collarbones plated. He's going to struggle really bad. And if he does drive, I'm tipping it's not going to be one of his best weekends.
Well, these guys tend to overcome these things. But my question is, how many rad mountain bike shunts did you have, Shebex?
No, mine were all... one was when I was 5 years old, I fell off the monkey bars. Another one was 11 years old when I... Actually, four times. I said three, four. 11-year-old, when I was chasing my brother on the front lawn and slipped and broke it. 16 years old, I was going into the back of a pack to take a mark in footy, and a guy put his knee up, popped it out. And then when I was, 8 years ago, I was teaching the kids out in the backyard how to go over a jump on a BMX bike.
There we go.
Available on YouTube if you haven't seen it. And I just didn't have enough speed and fell straight down on my shoulder and
broke
my collarbone again.
You are coming from a place of incredible experience here that Van Giz is going to go. Oh,
yeah, but is it? But like what? 4, 8, and 16. I'm not sure they count. Do they?
No. But the most painful one was the adult one.
Mm. Yeah. Look, I will go on record saying I think he will race. Because I think they will struggle to stop him. Basically. Mm. And the fact that he apparently had surgery that afternoon, so broke it in the morning, had surgery that afternoon, pulled him out of Phillip Island for running in the GT car, which is a smart precaution. And Phillip Island, especially in a GT3 car, is all lateral loads. It's all long loaded aero corners, which put stress on your upper body when you're trying to turn the wheel in a GT3 car laden with downforce. And of course in the belts as well. So I'm not saying Sandown's any better, because it's bumpy as all hell, and it's a very much a stop-go circuit. So it'll be the heavy stop down at Dandenong Road in turn one that'll hurt him when he's straining against the brakes. But I think he'll run. I really do. And everything that the team has put out says they're pretty confident he will. And there's no reason for them to say otherwise. That's just my opinion. He might not. But again, we talked about this earlier about the fact that the super sub is Jamie Wincup. So what happens if Shane Van Gisbergen doesn't run next weekend at Sandown? Oh, Garth, would you mind, current Bathurst champion, just step in for a weekend, would you? Don't mind?
They've got two backstops sitting there in the commentary booth.
Well, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Garth and Craig.
But it's probably a handy thing for the championship to bring the leader back to the pack a bit. I mean, if all indications are, if he just kept doing what he was doing at Bathurst and runs away with the championship, this might just bring him back to the pack a bit and make things a bit spicy.
All I can say is they can say as much as they like, he'll be fine. They won't know until Friday, or they won't know until Saturday at practice when he actually jumps in for that first practice session as to whether how he's going to be. And
the other thought, I suppose, will be the fact that Simmons Plains is only 3 weeks afterwards. So do you skip Sandown and make sure he's 100% for Tassie? Or do you run Sandown and run the risk of aggravating it and pushing back that recovery, so he runs Simmons Plains slightly injured? But I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
And his deal with Triple Eight is that he's always had a clause there that he can compete in other types of car racing up to a point in the season, go and do his drifting, his rallying, whatever the hell he wants to do, to save him from getting injured at the crucial time of the year. Here he's off riding his push bike around and hammers himself.
Mm. Yeah.
Odd deal. They sort of tried to protect himself from himself doing all these other types of car racing, and it's something entirely different that's undone him.
But imagine the revolution in the paddock if all of a sudden every team owner went out and said, no, you can't ride your bike anymore. 98% of the field use it as their main source of fitness training. So there'd be a riot, wouldn't they?
The amazing thing was, if he was riding a motorbike at Phillip Island this weekend, he probably would have been okay.
Well,
because those guys with broken legs, broken arm, everything.
Yeah, probably. But I'm not sure RD will let him race a bike. Didn't let him run Speedway in New Zealand over the summer. But so he just went and won the New Zealand Grand Prix instead. Now, let's just move on, because if you don't know the name Marcus Lemonis before last weekend, you probably will have now, because Mark, this is a story you've followed quite closely. Quite one of the more remarkable sponsorship stories in motorsport for the last, 10 years, maybe. In that the major sponsor of the Camping World Truck Series, Camping World, was also the major sponsor for a third of the Camping World Truck Series field in the Camping World Truck Series race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway last Friday night, American time.
Yeah, madness. Absolute madness. One of these late night tweet sessions that seemingly got out of hand. He put out the tweet. He's known as a great benefactor in the sport over there, and he sponsors a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have sponsorship. And he just put out a tweet going, does anyone not have sponsorship this weekend at Las Vegas? Hit me up. And it turns out 10 different drivers hit him up, and he had 10 Camping World trucks out there that all looked reasonably the same. Which I couldn't imagine the spotters having absolute kittens about that. That would not be fun.
See, at least our mates at National Transport Insurance have three different brands. Now, they sponsor six cars in the supercar field. But
well, they had eight last weekend, the other weekend at Bathurst.
Yeah, but at least they've got different brands which they can rotate across their cars, so not everyone's running a Jack LeBrock truck assist livery. So
wait until we get 10 boost cars in the supercars field.
Well, that there is a potential of that happening, isn't there? But an amazing deal. So 15K sponsorship, which turned into 25 grand if you finish in the top 10. 35 if you finished in the top five, and you got 50 instead of the 15 if you won the race. So pretty good, which equates to 65,000-ish AUD. So
not bad.
But the total investment, as Mark documented on the story on TRT, is under 200 grand Australian. To have a third of the field, plus you're the naming rights sponsor of the series anyway.
It's not bad.
So from a marketing spend, it's probably not that bad.
And I mean, stats-wise, the truck series over there has more viewers, obviously, bigger country, 300 million people, but their normal Friday night shows, they're getting over a million people tuning in. So there's eyeballs there watching it. So clearly there's some value in sponsoring it. And those teams, some of them were just family money, like Sheldon Creed's got a lot of family money. It's not as if he can't afford to do that. He won the championship last year and has obviously been a mainstay in the super trucks for such a long time. But he took him up on the Camping World deal because it would have been just the family money on the side of the car. So they swapped that up, put a wrap on it, and he went out there and did his thing. The top prize did not go off, though.
No.
John Hunter Nemechek from Kyle Busch Motorsport took the win, so Lemonis kept a bit of his coin that way.
I'm disappointed that you back a third of the field, you don't win the race. I reckon you'd be annoyed.
he rode off a few cars. That was all right.
That's fair. But I reckon he would have got 190 grand in media and social media buy-in before 100%. The before a million viewers on Fox Sports watched the truck race on Friday night.
Well, we ran a story on him.
Well, exactly right. There's, I mean, he's 90 grand straight away.
I mean, he's probably not going to sell many caravans in Australia, but that's another thing.
But if he decides to expand Camping World into Australia, we do have a very lucrative and expansive outdoor boating, fishing, camping market here. So well, who knows?
A sign of how generous this bloke is, there's a magazine publication over in the States that's defunct now, Grand National Scene, and then became NASCAR Scene. And the Scene Vault, they've got a podcast where they talk about all the old issues and talk to all the old characters in the sport. And their plan is to digitize all of their back catalogue of magazines. And it's a very expensive thing to do it professionally and host it all properly and give people access to it. And Marcus Labonis put his hand up and said he would pay for the digitizing of all those magazines. So, wow. You know, a great lover of the sport and a backer of people who need the backing. And on magazines, good effort this week, Auto Action. They chalked up 50 years in circulation, which is pretty incredible. I mean, I spent 10 years as their Queensland correspondent, for what that's worth. And I was a snot-nosed kid and probably finished as a snot-nosed middle-aged person by the time I finished there. But that was a great experience. And it's great for the sport that Auto Action's still keeping on.
Mm.
We need publications. We need outlets covering the sport. It's a bit of a worry for mine. I mean, there was always a level of competition in that printed scene. Obviously, time's moved on, as we're seeing with the fight that newspapers are having with Google and Facebook at the moment. Clearly, what they're doing, they're still selling copies to keep it going. But there was always competition there. In the early days, it was Racing Car News and Auto Action. Then it was Motorsport News. And it was always there was respect there, but it was always a battle. And you used to go to the news agencies on a Wednesday morning or a Thursday morning to pick up both to see who had what news.
Well, and Mark, the list of journos, and yourself and I will rule ourselves out of this because we'd plonk along, but the list of high-quality people that have come through those publications, even in our time in the sport since, say, 2001, too, and you look at the list of people like Aaron Noonan, Mark Glendening, who's now senior editor at Racer in the States.
Mark Fogarty.
Well, I wasn't going to quite get to folks just yet. He's a bit before our generation. Shebexta, he's more yours. In fact, he's even before your generation.
Yeah, he is too.
It is one of the great photos in their 50-year thing is a photo of Mark Fogarty and our mate David Siegel from the Dark Ages with hair. Quite remarkable. Yeah, truly extraordinary. I'm amazed Siegel let that slip through the cracks and get in the publication. So Noonan, obviously, with the Sleuth Empire now. Grant Rowley, Andrew Van Leeuwen, who's Australian editor for motorsport.com. You know, Chris Jordan, who's boss of Porsche at PR. Alex Inwood, who was editor of Wheels up till this year and is now head of digital for the whole group running Wheels and Motor magazine. Dylan Campbell, who's new Wheels magazine editor. The list goes on and on and on of people, young, talented journos that have got their start at AA, especially, but also Motorsport News. I was in the M News camp when I was at Junior Burger over here in South Australia. They provide an amazing platform for these kids to get a start in the sport. Vitally important.
I've got to tell you, I started at Motorsport News, but then I sold my soul to the dark side at Auto Action.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, the biggest pull through I've ever had in my life to this point was from Aaron Noonan when he gave me a spray when he saw my byline in AA. My God. And I was a backup Queensland correspondent and state level stuff. Like, yeah. The backup. And the spray I copped, that was magnificent.
Yeah. Yeah. It was passionate days. Passionate days. Dan Jordan, who up till recently was Porsche Motorsport Australia PR boss. Up to 2019, he and I were the two motorsport reporters in South Australia for the magazines. I was M News, he was Auto Action. And we would, each of us would take half of the Malala Media Center and sit there to file our 250 words plus photo. It was an extra $25 if you got a photo published, which was vitally important back in those days. And we'd both be there to file our content and make our... Oh, what was your rate? You get about $80 for 200 words or something like that back in the day?
I got to tell you, the pay was better at AA.
Was it?
Yep, yeah. It was $100 a story. Didn't matter the length. You had a word count pay at M News.
Yeah, no, you did.
Wow.
Yeah. But good times. And well done to Bruce Williams and Heath, who's there full time, and young Dan, who's another good junior coming through. And to the team that keeps the magazine alive and keeps some competition in the industry, and to Fogues, of course, who's still one of the best news breaking journos out there, and keeps our other mates over at Speed Cafe on edge and keeps that competition going. I mean, while we at the Race Talk just sit back and sit in the middle in the neutral zone between the two of them, which we very much enjoy.
Very, very much. Boys, always great to catch up. We'll do it again next week.
Off to the island.
See you at Phillip Island this weekend.
Live on the screens of 7 Chebekstat. Don't miss it. It's going to be good. Good TV.
Beautiful stuff. Go on, Krause. See you, Mark.
See you later.
And we'll catch you next week right here on The Grid.